Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Good Lion Podcast. I'm Aaron Salvato.
And I'm Brian Higgins.
And we're here today to talk about God's right to change the plan. So yeah, this year has been really, really tough. We've talked about it a lot, but I think it's pretty much been the worst year of all time, at least in our lifetime. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if our audience has kept up with it, but it turns out this 2020 thing isn't going so well.
You don't know if our audience has kept up with the reality of it being 2020.
I'm just saying, maybe you haven't heard.
Like someone's listening and they're like, I thought it was 2015.
I'm sure that they know what year it is. I don't know. Maybe they didn't know that it's been kind of a nightmare.
It has. It's been challenging. And I think one of the biggest challenges for many of us is plans changing. It's been this constant sense of, I thought my life was going in one direction. I thought I was going to move here. I thought I was going to take this job. I thought I was going to marry this person or have this kid or start this new opportunity. And for so many people, it feels like our plans are just being put on the shelf. It feels like everything is changing. And that can be really challenging in the life of a Christian, because a lot of times we're living our life with this sense that God is directing us. You know, God is directing me to buy this house. God is directing me to start this family. God is directing me to start this job. So when the plan changes, it's like, God, did you pull a fast one on me? I don't know. Have you ever dealt with that?
Absolutely. It's a really scary feeling to think that your life is moving down this track. And normally we think of the track of our lives as being very linear. Step one is supposed to lead to step two, which is supposed to lead to step three, which is supposed to lead to step four. And it's these progressive stepping stones that move us from one place to another with no interruption, with no changes, with no sidestepping, with no starting over. And yet, even if we take the idea of how 2020 is accelerating all of that, we know just from life experience, it doesn't really go that smoothly. Mm. Like the plan doesn't stay the same forever, even if things are working the way that you predicted they would from the beginning.
Yeah.
And dealing with change, like you're saying, can be a really tough thing.
Mm. Absolutely. It can be so challenging. And I know in my life, it's been challenging. I know in your life, it's been challenging.
One of the things that's really hard to grapple with is where we think we're going to be in 5 years is so different from where we actually end up. Like Aaron, 5 years ago, if no major pandemic happened, where did you think you would be in 2020?
Okay. 5 years ago, let me think. What year was it 5 years ago? It's 2020. So yeah, 2015. 5 years ago, I thought that I would most likely stay at my home church, Calvary Vista, for maybe another decade or longer. I had no plans to leave. I'm in Oklahoma now, but back then I was in Southern California. And I just honestly thought I would stay the high school pastor or maybe transition into the college pastor role. But yeah, my life was youth ministry and my family and friends down in Southern California. And so I didn't really see anything changing. And I was very wrong. A lot changed.
A lot has changed. I was in a very similar boat. And in 2015, I got married and I was the youth pastor at Calvary Old Bridge. I was leading the junior high group. I was helping lead the worship ministry at that point, and I was kind of in this spot of, this is good, and I can be here for a while, and I had this hope that one day I would end up stepping out and being the lead pastor at a church, or at least being part of the teaching leadership at a church, but I always thought that was way in the future, and that was way down the line, and that I could just sit in that space of being newly married and working at this church and just kind of be happy in that forever. And that was, not to give too much away, because I know we'll dive into this later, but that was one planned move and one actual cross-country move ago that I thought all those things. So yeah, a lot has changed.
Yeah, a lot has changed, and it's been constantly changing the last few years, especially with COVID. I don't know about you, but I feel like in my life, I've gone through seasons where things were changing a lot. But then, I was in a season for a very long time where things were pretty steady. And I think that's when it's the most shocking, is when you're in that steady season and then you get kind of pushed out of the boat and you feel like you're just like, what? Like, where am I even swimming to? You know, how do I keep my head above the water here? And I think a lot of people are in that place right now. I think for so many, so much has changed. Even just the way that we do life and church and ministry and family and friendships and going to the grocery store, it's all changed. And I think that can be very hard for people. I think there's probably even a lot of you guys listening to this where maybe you've even repressed how hard it is and you're kind of pushing those feelings aside because you don't want to face them because it makes you feel uncomfortable. But I think if we all honestly take a look at the changes, not just in our own personal lives, Brian, but just the change of what has happened through this pandemic has been very hard for everybody.
Not only is it really hard, but it becomes more difficult to deal with when, like we were talking about earlier, you have this view of God where he is working one linear plan out from beginning to end. So I do think sometimes as Christians, we make change harder on ourselves because of the way we think about God's leadership over the world.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just think about how many, I don't know if you've heard this joke or seen this meme floating around, but it was poking fun at how many pastors this year, at the beginning of the year, you know, in January, they were planning these vision series about 2020. It's going to be 2020 vision from God. This is going to be our year to do great, big, amazing things. And then when all of this stuff hit, it was just like, oh, maybe that wasn't the plan. Maybe that wasn't what God
had
in mind.
Let's immediately put that branding away.
Yeah. Let's start planning our pandemic sermon series and let's completely forget about the 2020 thing. The title of this episode is God's Right to Change the Plan. And that is a topic that you came up with. Where did that come from? Like, how did you come up with that topic?
So this was something that I was really thinking about in April and May.
Okay.
At that time, I had been working at Calvary Bible College out in California because of different budget constraints related to COVID and everything that was going on. A lot of layoffs needed to happen. I honestly didn't think I was going to be part of that. And then I was. Mm. And the hard part was that was one of the few moments where I felt like I finally had a 5-year plan. I finally felt like I could see the direction, at least for a little bit. And I had to start wrestling with the fact of, I actually couldn't see the full plan. None of us could have seen this whole situation coming.
Yeah.
But personally, it's harder to wrestle with.
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely hard to wrestle with. And I think that would make me ask too, you know, this idea of God having the right, you know, because he's sovereign, he can change the plan, right? That idea makes me want to ask you, is God having the right to change the plan something that gives you hope, or is it something that frustrates you?
At first, it was something that frustrated me. Hmm. Now I find it to be something that gives me hope. Hmm. I think that title, God's Right to Change the Plan, that's just a fact. So we can choose how we're going to react to that fact, but we're not going to change that it is a fact. Hmm. Like, he does have that right. He does have that ability. We're going to talk through some passages that highlight that for us. And when I was first thinking about this back in April and May, that was something that I was just struck with. And at first it was super frustrating because I'm a big believer in God wants to partner with humanity. Mm. God wants to work along with us. He wants to include us in his mission of renewing the world. And I did believe that. I still believe that. It's something that I really value and cling to. And so when I was dealing with God has the right to just change the plan when he wants, it at first made me feel like, oh, so we're not really partners. Mm. Like, you just kind of do what you want.
If you went into business with somebody and you were business partners and you guys agreed, like, this is our plan, this is the business plan. And then a year into it, your partner's like, oh, I just changed the whole thing without asking you. That would be really frustrating.
Yeah. And that's kind of what it felt like. And I know that that's putting that illustration, you're on an equal footing with your business partner, but we're definitely not on equal footing with God. And I totally get that. But as you walk through life with God, it feels like you're just in this together sometimes. So when the plan really changes, it becomes painfully aware, oh, we're on two completely different planes.
Yeah.
And I have to be okay with where I stand and where God stands. Now, the flip side, to give kind of the hopeful picture of this, what I have found is whenever the plan is changing, when the change is in process, I'm very frustrated by it. Mm. I'm very upset. I can get very angry at God sometimes. I can have a real difficult time getting my mind around the change. Mm. Once we arrive at the change, I become very grateful, because when you see the end point of that season of change, a lot of times you look at things and you say, oh yeah, there's no way that I could have made this happen.
Yeah.
It had to be God
that
made this happen. And we can't see it in the middle of it, which is why we need to remind ourselves of what we know to be true so that we can combat what we feel to be true in those turbulent moments.
Mm. That's good. Yeah, it's something that I feel like is definitely challenging, because I agree. Like, when you live your life in a way where you are partnering with God, there's this expectation that he's going to be on the level with you and he's going to tell you things. He's going to give you direction. You know, that's kind of one of the marks of being a Christian, is you want to feel like you're being given direction. But that can be a huge, it can just be challenging when the plan changes and when you feel like you had been taking direction from God. Like, if I can just give a personal example, if that's okay.
Sure.
Most of you guys who listen to this show, you already kind of know my story, so I won't go into it too much. But for me lately, over the past couple of years, it's been this journey of trying to trust God and being blown away by his faithfulness, but also blown away by just some of the circumstances that feel like almost like a misdirection or, you know, a bait and switch. Like, for instance, you know, me and my wife, we were in Vista, California for many, many years doing youth ministry. It was amazing place to grow up and do ministry. It was a privilege to serve there. But we had this very definitive sense that God was calling us to the mission field. And it was just like, man, all signs seemed to point to Ireland. Like, I've told this story before, so I won't go too much into it, but we basically, you know, we're praying about Ireland for years because we felt like God put it on our heart. And then on a week where I was asking God for some clarity, like, please help me know if this is supposed to happen, you know, I ran into three different homeless people in the span of, you know, 1 or 2 weeks that all had something to do with Ireland. You know, there was a guy from Cork, Ireland, a guy with a tattoo that, you know, was like, I'm the Irish man. There was a homeless woman who literally walked up to me while I was contemplating canceling the missions trip to Ireland and was like, hey, you should go to Ireland. So it was bizarre. And it was one of those things where it felt supernatural. It felt like, you know, God is in this and he's guiding us. There's all these circumstances and, you know, people were behind us. Like, we had told our church, like, we're going to go to Ireland and do missions work. And so we hyped it up and everyone was excited about it. And we were excited and we lived there for 2 months, stayed with different pastors, and everything just felt like all signs were pointing to Ireland. And then we were back in California, you know, literally getting ready to quit our job and move to Ireland. And the power went out one night and we didn't have any electronics to distract us or anything. And me and my wife were just spending that night praying. Well, it was stormy outside. And it was during that time that God kind of impressed on my heart, like, actually, I don't want you to go to Ireland. I want you to go to Oklahoma. And it was such a weird thing. It was like, what on earth? That can't be God. There's no way. That's just me. I ate something weird. But over the next few weeks, like, we were praying about it and it all signs were pointing to Oklahoma. And it was just, it was so weird. It felt like God pulled this switch on me, because like, I love Europe. I love England. I love Ireland. I love all these places. Living there was like a dream. It was amazing. So it was like, there was so much potential for ministry stuff we could do there. So many open doors. I was going to teach at the Bible college out there. And yeah, just Oklahoma, there was no opportunities or nothing available at first. And it was very stretching for me. So I'm just trying to say that I understand what you're saying about the frustration that can happen when God changes the plan on you. It can be really difficult.
Yeah, there's very few people that I've met just in general who say, I love change. Like, it's a very common thing to say that we hate change. It's very normal to hear people say they struggle with things becoming different. For the most part, I think humans are creatures of habit. I think that there's real power in the habits that we form.
Yeah.
And those habits have really strong power to form us. I really deeply believe that. I think that's why things like spiritual disciplines matter so much, because our habits go a long way in shaping us. And you just kind of get into a habit wherever you are. And then when you start seeing, oh, I think these patterns are going to change in this direction, you know, seeing it ahead of time is very comforting. You get to start slowly shifting your habits towards something else. But the rapid changes that God makes, you just immediately leave behind one way of life and you have to jump into a complete different one. And it's culture shock on the system. It's really difficult for us to work through.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know you've been through that as well. I mean, you felt led by God to go to Portland and be involved with a church network and get involved with church planting. And I mean, what wasn't it that you were literally days away from moving? Like, you had your car packed up and then you got a phone call that it wasn't going to work out.
We had our car packed, or at least halfway packed. Yeah. We weren't fully there, but we had quit our jobs in New Jersey because we knew that Portland was coming up next. So neither of us were working, neither being my wife and I. We were living at her parents' house because we were trying to save up a little bit of money, or at least not spend more on rent because we were getting ready to go. I was job hunting in Portland and was lining up interviews and different things like that. We had signed a lease on an apartment.
Wow.
Like, we were all in. Like, we were ready to get going. And there had been a couple little hiccups along the way of us working things out with that church network. And the week before we were going to go, it started coming to a head. And I finally was just asking, like, hey, so we keep talking about this. Are we actually going to get this done?
Right.
And the week before we were going to go, like, we had had the leave date ready. We knew the path that we were driving and all that. A week before, I got a call saying, hey, so that job that you've been banking on, it's actually not going to be waiting for you when you get here.
Yeah.
And without that, we just weren't able to make it work. And it was like, Lord, that was 2 years of prayer and thinking. And we had visited Portland 3 different times in the process of praying through this and working through all of this. And we'd fallen in love with the city. Like, as we were praying through it, a few different people had come back from Portland and they would look at my wife and I and be like, you know, you guys seem like you'd really fit in there. And like, they wouldn't know that we were praying about potentially moving there at that point.
Stuff that seems like it's being part of,
things that seem like they're working together and things that don't just feel like sometimes you feel like you're just finding patterns because you want them. Like, you know how when you buy a car, suddenly you notice how many more of that car there is on the road.
Yeah, totally.
You know, like I just recently bought an 04 Accord.
Nice.
And I've been blown away at the number of old Accords there are on any given highway.
And it's like, those were there before.
Exactly. I never noticed that. I never thought about it, but now I'm looking for it. And so I find that pattern all the time.
Right. Yeah.
This didn't feel like that's what I was doing.
Yes.
This felt like the pattern was coming to me, which made it really easy to say, well, that's one of the ways that God speaks to people. So maybe this is him trying to speak to me.
It feels very biblical. It feels like the angel showing up to Gideon, you know? I mean, that's how my experience was with those homeless people. It was very strange to me that I've never seen an Irish person in Vista, California ever. And the day that I asked God to give me a sign, I run into this guy. So, yeah, I mean, I totally get it. I think that something that you and I have been coming to grips with over the past few years has been exactly what you're saying. God has the right to change the plan. But I think, I don't know if this is ruining like your thesis or not, but I think maybe, I think when we say God has a right to change the plan, when we say the word the plan, a lot of times we're thinking of like this master plan where it's like, from the foundations of time, this plan has always been the plan and it can never be changed. I think really what we mean when we say God's right to change the plan is God's right to change our plans, because we are often planning and coming up with strategies for our life. It's just how we humans are. But I think God always does have his big picture master plan in mind. And there's circumstances in our life where God causes things, where we cause things, sometimes even where Satan causes things. I think God is constantly able to adapt and move and change our plans or even Satan's plans to be more in line with his big picture master plan, if that makes sense.
It does. And when I think about the big master plan, I think one of the things that's important to realize is how broad it is.
Yeah.
So like the plan is that God wants to rescue humanity and offers salvation to everyone. Like that plan is not changing.
No.
There's not going to be a moment where God's like, you know what? We tried long enough. Like, I'm just done with you people. I'm going to Mars and I'll start over. I'm bringing Elon with me and I'll start over with a few of you and just move on from the rest. Like, I don't think that that is up for debate. I don't think that that's something where God is like, maybe I'll see this plan through and maybe I won't. But I think that our lived experience is that we begin to form plans. And a lot of times we begin to form plans in ways that we think God is part of.
Right.
And the reason why I still like using the plan instead of our plans is because I look back on that time of planning and moving towards Portland. And I really believe God was in that.
Yeah.
I believe that he actually was in that. He actually was providing that plan. I think that he's not surprised that I never ended up living there.
Like it wasn't, he wasn't faking you out, you don't think?
No, I don't think he was faking me out. I don't think he was lying. In my own prayers, I accused him of that.
Yeah, I remember when you were frustrated about that.
Yeah, I needed to work through that. But I think that he actually was speaking. I think he wasn't lying to me, but he was building something different than what I could see. So I felt like God and I had a plan, and I felt like that plan changed.
Yeah. Okay. Let me ask about that really quick. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is like kind of getting into like the theology of it, like the theological implications. Okay. So if God knows everything and if he can see the future, it's like, why? It's almost like, you know, when someone feels like God led them to date someone else and then they end up breaking up and they don't get married. And it's like, well, was it actually God or was it just me? And it's one of those very strange things where it's like, it's one of those strange things where the question is, you know, God being in something with him, ultimately knowing how things are going to play out. What was the purpose of it? Was it for you? I think I'm asking you questions that we can't answer, but it's like for you, did God actually intend for you to go to Portland and want you to go to Portland? But then on the human side of things, something shifted and changed. So then God said, well, we're not going to let all of that preparation go to waste. Now I'm going to send you somewhere else and you're going to use all of that in a different way. Or was it that he always knew Portland wouldn't happen? So he had you get involved thinking you'd be involved with it to prepare you for something else. I don't know. Like, I don't know if we can answer those questions, but just from your own experience, what do you think?
I don't know if that's an answerable question, but what I can answer is the lived experience.
Okay.
I know that the 2 years of praying and getting ready to move to Portland, it was one of the seasons of greatest growth for me personally, for me and my relationship with Jesus, for my relationship with my wife, for my wife's relationship with Jesus. Like we look at it and feel like we didn't end up going to Portland, but we learned how God speaks to us.
That's good.
Like we didn't reach the destination, but we got closer with God and we got better at learning how he tends to guide us and how he likes to reveal things to us. Not that God only speaks in one way to anybody personally, but there's probably a way he's going to speak to you most often. And for us, we learned some of that rhythm. We learned some of how that works in our lives. Yeah. And that experience was invaluable.
Yeah.
So whether or not we ended up going the place that we wanted to go or thought we were going, God ended up giving us a really, really fun season of ministry out at the Bible College, did a lot to grow our marriage, and has made us more confident in our ability to discern, was that my idea or was that God's idea? For us, like there was this huge step backward that happened. Like it felt like we were supposed to go somewhere, but we didn't actually get there. But really, God's plan for us is that we get closer to him, not that we go accomplish these things along the way.
Yeah,
so wow. In that sense, everything regarding Portland was a success.
Dude, I think you're really touching into something. Right before you said it, I was thinking basically the same thing. And I feel like I feel like a lot of times growing up in church and ministry, we hear these stories of, you know, heroes of the faith, you know, whether it's in the Bible or church history or even, you know, recent church history. you know, guys who've done great things for the Lord. And so it can kind of build up this mythology in your mind where it's like, you know, in order to be a great Christian, you have to be somebody. Like, you have to be the guy who moves and goes to this town and turns it upside down. And, you know, it's all riding on you. So if that's ever our mentality, where it's like the goal is for us to go and do something great, that can cause so much struggle and strife in our life and mind when the dreams that we have of doing something great don't work out. But if we realize the goal is actually that God is working on every single person on the world, you know, especially Forefront, he's working on Christians, helping them become more like him and getting closer to him. That's the end product. That's the goal. And so for us, it's like when we go through these experiences, it's almost like, you know, I would think of it this way with your situation. God wanted to do a work in Portland. He was in the moment looking at you and seeing, this is a guy I can use in Portland. And then something happened on the earthly side of things that created a roadblock where you couldn't go. That doesn't mean that God can't do a work in Portland anymore. He's still going to do it. He's always been planning on doing it. He's probably just going to use somebody else. But then, like, circle back to you. Well, God wants to do a work where you are in New Jersey. And so he's bringing you there and he's plugging you in. It's like God is constantly working and doing things, but the pressure is not on us. It's just wherever we are, God can use us. And sometimes he gets us inspired to go somewhere and do something and it works out and it's great. Other times there's roadblocks. I mean, even the Apostle Paul, you know, he had these ideas in his mind. I want to go see Nero. I want to speak to Caesar. And he was shipwrecked and had all this stuff happen. And that didn't ruin the ministry God was doing through him. There were other opportunities that popped up along the way, even being shipwrecked on an island. There was opportunities to do ministry. So does that make sense? It's like that takes the pressure off of us, where it's like, even if you spent 10 years planning to go to Ireland or Portland and you don't end up eventually going, that doesn't mean it was a waste, because God did a work in you in the process. And now wherever you are, whether it's Oklahoma or California or New Jersey, God's going to use all of the stuff he poured into you wherever you are. Like, we're not bound by location. We're Christians. Wherever we are, we can use what God has prepared us for.
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. And I think that one of the things that we need to always be careful of is we're used to just using America as an example, but this really works in a lot of places around the world. The way that life works is you become an adult at 18 and then you're generally told you should do college. So people are used to the idea of you dedicate about 4 years to college and then you get out of college and you work until you're about 65, right? Which is like, what's that, 43 years or something like that?
Yeah, I think so.
So we're used to the idea, and not everybody does 4-year college and not everybody needs to. I totally get that. So, but we're used to the rough time frames that we set out being prepare yourself for 4 years, work for almost 11 times that.
Yeah, totally.
That the preparation versus the actual production, it's way, way on one side compared to the other. That's not really what we see in the Bible.
Yeah.
We find in a lot of biblical examples really, really long preparation time compared to what we're used to seeing versus pretty short ministry time. And yet they're the ones that are held up as great examples. Even think about the life of Jesus. Like, if anybody should have started their podcast at 18, like, we would think that it would be Jesus. Like, he should have been
the best podcast
getting
ever.
All of his stuff out there. Like, that's how we would think about it. And yet his public ministry starts just 3 years before his death. And he seems to spend most of that time telling people closest to him that his time still hadn't come.
Yeah, that's huge. Like, if anybody had the right to just be, you know, I'm the biggest deal in the world, listen to me, it'd be Jesus. But he's so, like, undersells himself. I've never really thought about it that way. Like,
absolutely.
He's very subtle in what he does, but it's the power of God that makes it work. And I think that's the key for us, is we don't have to build a platform for ourselves or make our names great or promote ourselves in a way that tries to build ourselves up. If God wants to use us, he's going to use us, and he's going to guide us to how he's going to do it. And I think, you know, for me, I'm looking at our situation, and I'm hoping the audience is relating, because fill in for you guys listening, whatever you have thought the plan was going to be and it didn't work out. And now you think like, oh no, I can't follow God anymore because I didn't, you know, make the plan happen. He is adapting constantly to the changes in our lives and world, and his big master plan never changes, and he can find a way to plug in what he's given you into any scenario. So for you and me, Brian, like, Ireland still could be on the table one day. Portland could still be on the table one day, but we are where we are. We're in Oklahoma and New Jersey respectively. And I mean, I don't know about you, but like I've seen so much fruit come out of moving to Oklahoma for me. Like on the practical side, it's been so good for my relationship with my wife. It's been really nice to not be working at a church. I mean, I'm still working. I'm working more than I even did back at my old job, but I'm working from home. I'm so much more connected to my wife, and she is just constantly able to see her family, which is something that she didn't get to do when she lived in California at all. It's such a blessing for her. My wife has grown so much spiritually in the past 2 years, probably more than she has in a long time. So that's really practical. But you know, beyond that, I mean, the Good Lion Podcast Network started because of this. If I was still at Vista, we probably wouldn't be doing this. You know, there's been tons of ministry.
A world without this podcast is not a world I want to be in.
I know, right? Yeah. But there's been so much fruit that's come from it. And I'm so blessed. Like I've been able to do in the past 2 years, so much ministry in ways that I've never thought I could even do before. And when I moved out here, literally the first couple of months, I was depressed because I was like, well, I guess my ministry career is over. There's nothing I can do out here. Mm. And God showed me how wrong I was. What about you? Do you feel like there's been fruit from your experience of leaving and going to California and now coming back? Like what's been for you the fruit in your life?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a shorter time, so we're still kind of seeing the way that things are going.
How long has it been for you?
I have been back in New Jersey.
No, I mean like starting back to the beginning of when you first left Jersey for California.
Oh, it's been a year and 3 months.
Okay.
A year and 4 months, something like that.
I think I'm coming up on like 2.5 years since all this started for me. But yeah, that's a while though. A year and 3 months is a lot of time. So for you, looking at the whole scope of it, like what's been kind of the fruit in your life from it?
I think the biggest thing was definitely my wife and I serving at the Bible College. And that was the first time where we were both in full-time ministry together. You know, our roles at the school weren't exclusively ministry. My wife was working as a receptionist. I was working in the admissions and marketing departments of the school. And so that wasn't necessarily ministry all the time. You know, it was for the ministry that was going on there, but it semi felt like I had, for lack of a term, like a regular job. Mm. And then we got to do ministry together, but we were there together and we were on the same schedule.
That's great.
We were able to really figure out what our rhythm was. You know, in Jersey, we had all of our family around, which was great. And it's been so exciting to come back to that. But in California, it was really just us. You know, we had a few friends out there, but yeah. You know, when we went there, you know, we had a lot of learning about what our rhythm was.
That's
and
great.
What ministry for the two of us together looks like. And we learned a ton in that season. And now coming back to Jersey, it feels like we can just see this place with a whole fresh set of eyes, and we can understand a little bit differently because we've seen something else. Mm. And you know, we're excited about, you know, the hope that we always had was that we would end up back in Jersey and that we'd be, you know, praying about church planting and seeing what God might do there. And, you know, this is kind of a scary episode to talk about that, because once you put it out there, maybe the plan will end up changing. But we're just confident that, you know, God has worked before. He clearly is at work with where we're at right now. And we just want to hold everything with an open hand, as yes, my wife yeah. would say, and, you know, just let God guide and lead as he sees fit.
That's great. Yeah, it's all valuable. Everything that we go through.
Absolutely.
It's valuable, and God can use it for the present and for the future. Now, I'd want to ask you, how's it been for you? I'm curious because I know I have feelings about this, but you know, we're talking about change this episode. And I know a lot of times change can bring unique struggles. You and I are different guys, so I don't know if we will relate totally on this, but I'd be curious for you, as someone who did youth ministry for a long time, has it been a struggle to step out of it? Has it been a struggle to, you know, not define yourself as a youth pastor anymore when that was kind of an identity? And then also, you know, youth ministry is very relational. Has it been hard to step away from the relationship from the kids and the volunteers and the leaders? I mean, I know that those relationships don't die when you step out of a job, but you know, when you're not around those people on a weekly basis, it can definitely be a big change.
Aaron, if there's anything this podcast has taught us, it's that we're basically the same person. So yes, I have struggled with all of those same things. So thinking about just kind of where I'm at right now, I will say that was less of a struggle when I was in California because the work that we were doing was still ministry focused. So it was rebuilding relationships, and
You were around a lot of young adults, so it felt very similar to youth ministry.
Yeah, it definitely felt similar to youth ministry in a lot of ways. So it felt like it was the soft exit as opposed to just kind of being out the door as opposed to where we're at now. Yeah. Where we're at now, one of the ways that God has provided for us is my wife was a hairstylist before we left for California, and she's actually able to work again at the same salon she was working at before we left New Jersey. So she slipped right back into that job. And that's been one incredible way that God has provided for us. Another is that I just recently got a job where I work in a marketing company that sells all kinds of different things. And I write user manuals and I write product packaging and I write some web content trying to sell those things. Try not to get too excited. I know it's a whirlwind.
It's very different from youth ministry.
It's very different from youth ministry. And the hardest part, I think, is talking with other Christians and watching them look at me like it's not okay that I have the job that I have.
Oh my gosh, dude. I was going to bring this up. Yeah, that's huge thing.
Definitely the toughest part.
That's a weird thing that we do in our little subculture where it's almost like you left the Jedi Order and now you're living on an island in solitary confinement, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard because, so I look at the job that I have and I know that there's part of me where I make fun of it because it's not necessarily the most exciting thing in the world. And I get that. But there's also a huge part of me that's like, I haven't had a job in 4 months. I am so excited. I'm so grateful that I have this job. And I'm so thankful that God opened the door for that. There is a lot of things that I like about it. I like the people that I'm working with. I do actually enjoy the writing of it. I love the fact that I get to just work as a writer. That's really fun for me. And I enjoy some of the different pieces that come with it. There's so many things that my wife and I look at and say, wow, this could really be God setting us up so that if we do wind up planning a church, I have a job that could fit really nicely alongside planting a church. You know, a lot of people, when they're first starting in planting churches, the church is not able to provide their salary. And so they're working full-time jobs and they're trying to get the church going. And, you know, we're bracing for the idea that that could become our reality in the future. And of all the jobs to do while you're trying to plant a church, this isn't one of the worst of them. You know, there's a lot of good advantages that come with where we're at. So we're excited about where we're at. I am happy with where we're at.
Yeah.
I am grateful to God and I feel his hand and leadership in it. But a lot of people that I'll talk to, it's like they know me as a pastor.
Yeah.
And so when I tell them what job I have, I can see them trying to work through, well, that doesn't sound like being a pastor at all.
It sounds like a step down.
It sounds like a step down.
If you're a youth pastor at a Calvary Chapel, the next logical step in people's minds is you go and start a church yourself. You go straight from your church job to another church job. And, you know, never mind that, you know, Paul the Apostle was a tent maker in between all the stuff he was doing. Like that's just not how we do things. It's the American mindset of, you know, it's got to be bigger and better. The next thing you go to needs to be bigger and better. and we don't think that way financially in the church, but we think that way ministry-wise. The next ministry you're involved in needs to be bigger and better than the one you were involved in before.
And even just think about the way that we talk about our jobs overall in America. We ask the question, what do you do? But the response is, I am, and then whatever your job is.
Yep.
Like, people don't normally say, I work in construction, or I work in IT, or I work in marketing. They say, I am in construction. I am in IT. I am in marketing. I'm pretty sure that we could even listen to the earlier part of this episode, and I think I said, I am a writer.
Yeah,
you know, that's generally how we talk about it. We normally put job into the place of identity, and we don't talk about it as a thing we do. We talk about it as a thing we are.
Yeah.
And as pastors, I think it hits to an even deeper level, because it's not just this is a thing you are. It's probably this is a thing you are that you've aspired to be for a while.
Yes. Yeah, I feel like that's something everybody goes through. Even the guys that you would think don't, you know, the guys who seem established and like they have it all together. The episode I did with Mike Neglia about the imposter syndrome, we really looked into that, how everybody kind of struggles with that identity. I mean, this is something that, dude, I mean, I've struggled so much with. We've talked about it, but it's been, I feel like right now I'm in a good place, but throughout the 2.5 year journey, I mean, I didn't have a soft reset. I had a hard reset. I went straight from running a ministry and speaking at camps and just feeling like very much like I was being useful and effective and I was helping people, to being in Oklahoma where nobody wanted me to preach. Nobody wanted me to teach. No one wanted me to disciple. It was just like, yeah, just there's like 100 churches in this town. Just pick one and go and live your life and go get a normal job. And that was so hard for me. Like, and dude, I mean, it was this struggle where I had so many people from my home church talk to me with sort of this attitude of like, hey, I know you're like, cause like, to back up, I was trying so hard to be involved in ministry. Like, that's my heart, you know? So I started a ministry where I was designing free websites for churches, and I poured myself into that for almost a year. I started a Bible study at a coffee shop. But, you know, I had people from my home church who were like talking to me with this attitude of, you know, I know you're doing that podcast thing. I know you're making those websites for missionaries and churches, but when are you going to get back into real ministry? Like, when are you going to preach again? When are you going to get up on stage? Like, I would literally have people tell me like, the church you're attending, like, you should tell them you're a preacher. Maybe they'll have you preach. And I'm just like, that's not really how it works. Like, you don't just show up at a church when
Just like, think about it the other way, where like, when you did have a church job, and imagine what the conversation would be if a guy came up to him and was like, I'm not from here.
Yeah.
I'm a preacher. Yeah. Do you want to let me talk on stage with a microphone?
Yeah. No.
You're like, no, I think we're good.
Yeah.
I think it's okay.
Totally. And
why don't you hang out for a minute and then we'll see.
Dude, the hardest thing for me was being that guy. Like, I hated being the outsider and the weirdo.
Yeah.
And just going back to like that idea of, you know, people looking at you and saying, when are you going to get back into real ministry? And I'm sure right now you're feeling some of that, like working at the job you're at, there's probably that wrestling where it's like, this isn't a church job. Like, I need to get past this to then eventually planting a church, and then I'll be, you know, fully actualized into my identity. But I think the thing that we need to continue to tell people listening to this show is this is important. I really want to hit on the reality that everybody is in ministry. This is something I preached over and over again when I was, I almost said when I was in ministry. See, it's infected my mindset as well. When I was working on staff at a church, I would constantly tell people, yeah, I'm on staff, but we're all in ministry. We are all called to serve Jesus in whatever way that looks like. I just want to keep hitting that. That is huge. And it's so true. For me, I've had to redefine what it means to be in ministry coming out of working at a church and trying to figure out how to do it on my own. And it's been hard and challenging because when you don't work at a church, the doors aren't open as much as they used to do the things that you want to do. But it's been humbling to see other ways that God wanted me to serve in ministry and to actually call those things ministry and to say, you know, this is important because it's important to God. When you and I were starting the podcast network, I was at the Expositors Collective Conference, and dude, I love the Expositors Collective so much. I love the podcast. I love Mike, but I've struggled listening to the podcast because there's this romanticized idea of preaching, not in a negative way. They're not doing it on purpose, but I've heard a lot of guys on that show say, you know, like preaching is the highest calling of the Christian. It's the most important thing you can do with your life. And that dude, like that's hit me because I'm like, I want to be preaching, but there's no opportunities for me to do that right now. And so there's been times where I felt like total failure. But what I'm trying to say is that's a wrong mentality. When I went to one of the Expositors Collective conferences, I sat down with Pilgrim Benham and he heard about what we were doing with Good Lion. And he was like, man, like, I just want you guys to know that what you're doing is just as important as planting a church. And you probably don't feel like it because it doesn't have the optics of that, but it is really important. And I've come to own that and feel like what we're doing here.
We love you, Pilgrim.
It's great. I feel like what we're doing here is really important, but I would say to the audience members, like, maybe you are somebody who you don't serve at a church, you know, you're not volunteering for children's ministry or youth ministry or whatever, but maybe like you feel called by God to help the homeless people in your community, or maybe your grandma's sick and you take care of her. Ministry's everywhere. And it glorifies God, whether or not it has this appearance of this big, important in the world's eyes ministry thing. So I'm just encouraging people to take comfort in that. Like right now during COVID, during 2020, all this stuff, there is ministry everywhere if you're willing to step into it and own it, and don't worry about how other people define it. Just worry about being faithful to what God has defined it as. What ministry has God called you to, if that makes sense?
First of all, I completely agree with what you're saying. The thing that really stands out to me from all of that is just the way that we define the word ministry. That, I think, is the easiest thing to shift, or that's the thing that when it shifts for us, it'll have the biggest impact. Because normally, like when you just say a ministry or ministry around church people, normally they think of children's ministry, preaching ministry, ushers ministry, you know, sound ministry, worship ministry. And all of those things are functions that happen within a church building, normally within the context of a Sunday or midweek service. Yeah. So to minister in our minds, because we label all of those things ministry, and I'm not saying that's wrong, I'm saying that's not enough. When that becomes the only thing we label as ministry, what we assume is if you're in the church, you're in ministry.
Right.
And if you're doing things outside the church, you're not in ministry.
Right. Ministry happens inside the church building.
Yeah. And so what we end up doing is encouraging people, you need to serve. You need to be in ministry, because we look at the Bible and we rightfully conclude that God wants all of his people to be ministering. He wants all of us to be in ministry alongside him. Great. The way we normally encourage people to do that is just by doing something in the church. Make sure you sign up to serve with kids ministry. Make sure you sign up to serve in parking ministry. Make sure if you're a musician in any way, you better make sure that you sign up to serve in worship ministry, because it's always hard to find servants and God gave you that gift. So you better use that gift for him. And
right,
we get so caught up in, if you have any skill set, you have to use it in the church, instead of more broadly saying, what is the church even all about? What's the whole point of humans using skill sets within the church? Why did we come up with that idea? And what it really comes down to is we wanted to show people God's love for the lost world. And we can do that in church and outside of church.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen. You know, it's interesting. You brought up the list of things that happen that we call ministry, you know, children's ministry, women's ministry, sound ministry. Take that, for instance, like sound ministry. What is happening there? It's somebody normally sitting at a switchboard moving knobs up and down, but we call it sound ministry. Why? Because you're doing it for the Lord. Like you're not mm-hmm. sitting in a recording studio, you know, producing an album for some random band. Like you're like, oh, I'm doing this for God. Like I'm trying to help what is happening here with the worship. I'm contributing. So take that mentality outside of the church. Like if you're at home and, you know, let's say dishwashing, right? Like, and you know, I'm not just saying specifically with wives, husbands can and should wash dishes as well. I'm trying to get better at that. I'm convicting myself. But anyway, dishwashing. Nice. you can just wash a dish because it's your responsibility, or you can dedicate it to the Lord and say, you know what, Aaron, because you love your wife, you're going to wash these dishes. I'm being really hyper specific right now to something I'm obviously guilty about. But you know what I mean? Like dishwashing ministry, because it's for the Lord. You're saying, I'm dedicating this to the Lord. There's so many things in your life that you can do that is ministry. Raising kids, being a good husband, being a good wife, those things are also ministries. And we need to see those things as ministry, because this is what I'm realizing is like being forced, not forced because I chose to leave, but being forced by just myself and the leading of the Lord to step out of full-time church ministry. You know, I feel like I've learned what the average person goes through, the average non-staff person. And it's really hard to feel like you're making a difference, if I'm honest. When you're not on staff at a church, it's really hard to feel like what you're doing is even a drop in the bucket, because you look at people on staff at churches and it just seems like what they're doing is so much more important. I just want to encourage everybody listening who's not on staff at a church but feels called to ministry, do whatever God is calling you to do and take comfort in knowing that He's with you and He's for you and He's right by you. And what you're doing, even if it seems very unimportant, you know, like even if it would never get anybody donating to it or supporting it or even posting a picture of it on Instagram to say, wow, look at this great ministry. As long as it's something God has called you to do and you're faithful to it, it is huge in God's eyes. He's excited about it. Angels are celebrating about it. It's important, and it'll always be way more important than you'll ever fully know. And you just need to be faithful to it is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, the little things to us are the things that really matter to God. And I think that God doesn't call all of us to work at churches, because if He did, that would mean that we had no one out in the world showing the love of Jesus to people that need to hear about it. Mm. You know, sometimes it's easy for members of church staff to close themselves into a church bubble. And so the things that we do in church staff, they feel like they're making this huge impact, because we're doing them in front of Christians who agree with us. And one of the things that can be difficult once you're off church staff is you go serve at your church on a Sunday morning and it's great and you're enjoying it and you're being told like, yeah, this is really good. And then you go to work Monday morning and no one cares.
Yeah, right.
And now you're tired because you were serving at church all weekend and everybody else is refreshed and everybody else, you know, is doing their own thing. And you're like, oh, I'm just one of the people in these cubicles. I'm just one of the people at this construction site. Like it, you just kind of blend back in. Whereas in church circles, you either get the next day off so that you can, you know, sleep in a little bit.
Oh, I miss that.
Or you go right back to the church office and you sit around and you're like, whoa, yesterday was good, right? And you just like keep that wave kind of going.
Yeah, whereas you're on a staff of people where you're all working towards this mission together for the gospel. And so you're constantly surrounded by that positive energy. That's not what the average person goes through. The average person, like you said, they go back to the cubicle on Monday and nobody cares about the stuff they're fighting for on Sunday.
Yeah. And it's just back to the grind, and it makes you feel really isolated and really alone. And so I think there's something to be said for ministry that happens by people that don't work at a church. I really believe God sees the difference in the sacrifice that you're making.
Yeah. Yes. 100%. Some of the stuff that you were just sharing, I mean, is that even for you struggles and frustration right now in the season that you're in?
What do you mean specifically?
Well, you talked about cubicles. I know you're working in cubicles, right?
I work in a cubicle. Yeah. I mean, I work in a cubicle where no one knows that I do a podcast or that I
want to plant a church or...
Yeah, they don't know I want to plant a church. One of my coworkers knows that I worked at a church before. Two of them, actually. Right. That has come up a little bit. But yeah, it's a world where it's like completely different from any world that I've been in before this.
Yeah.
And there's something that's kind of like soothing and calming about it.
Yeah.
Like right now, that's still something that I enjoy about it because I'm only 3 weeks in.
The honeymoon phase.
But yeah. And it's also this job is coming off of a long stretch of unemployment.
Yep.
So like a friend of mine a couple weeks ago asked me, do you enjoy the job? And I was like, I don't think I can answer that yet because I'm just so happy that I have a job.
Right.
That like if the owners came over to me and they were like, hey, part of this job is we punch you in the face 3 times a day. I'd be like, well, got to do the work so I can get paid. So, all right, go ahead.
Right.
Do your worst. Like I would just be in for it. I wouldn't be like, I mean, I'd be upset, right? But I wouldn't, like, that's how just in I am right now.
Right.
But I do think this is one of the weird things about following Jesus in general. I have more struggles with my job in front of Christians than I do on my own or at work. Like when I'm at work, everybody's just cool. They're just doing their stuff.
Yeah.
Like we're not really bothered too much. Like we don't, you know, things don't get too crazy, at least not yet. You know, I'm sure right. that'll end up changing, but like everybody's just kind of doing their thing and generally is kind to one another and just wants to get the work done and get home. It's really in front of Christians where I start to, sometimes they bring it up. So then I start feeling it even before it comes up of like, wait a second, am I doing something that matters?
Yeah.
Am I doing something that's changing the world?
And there's it's more like, of a pressure to perform. Like it gets you out of that mentality of I'm doing this for the Lord. And you can very easily slip into a mentality of like, I want to be as good of a Christian as people believe I am.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a good way of phrasing it.
There's a book I want to keep bringing people back to. It's called With. It's just called With, W-I-T-H, by Sky Jathani. You can listen to Sky on the Holy Post podcast with Phil Vischer, the guy who voices Bob the Tomato and created VeggieTales. But anyway, Sky wrote this book called With, and basically it's about how we live our lives in various different ways. We live our life from God. We live our life over God, under God, for God, which is the one I related to a lot, you know, trying to do things for God, but we constantly miss out on living life with God. Like we don't live for God. We live with Him. That's why we were made to live alongside Him and serve with Him. And that book has just helped me so much. It's so good.
It's such a needed reframing of things, because in ministry we talk about, and again, I'm using it in ministry, meaning working at churches, which isn't what I want it to mean when I say it, but
right.
People that have church jobs and are preaching, we're always talking about how we should live our lives for God. What can you be doing for the kingdom? You know, I know a number of preachers that use the joke where they say, we all need to ask ourselves, what on earth are you doing for heaven's sake?
Yeah.
Meaning like, what are we doing here that's going to have lasting eternal impact? And it puts that focus on what do you do? What are you accomplishing right now? And bringing it back to what got us started on this whole episode, because we're so focused on what we do, when what we do changes, we question everything else about our relationship with God.
Yeah.
Whereas if we begin with, I just live life with God, then when life changes, that's where you're going to find the satisfaction of hope that can come from life with God. Because it's like, yeah, my circumstances around me are changing, but the person I live life with is not changing. God is still here. God
Absolutely.
Is still with me.
Absolutely.
God is still walking me through these different things. And yeah, what I'm doing is going to change. That's okay. Who I'm with isn't changing.
That's really, really, really good. So we've been talking a lot about change. Do you like Fleetwood Mac?
I know of Fleetwood Mac, and there's like a general sound in my head for Fleetwood Mac songs.
They definitely have a sound.
But I don't think I can name any of them.
Fleetwood Mac definitely has a sound. When you hear it, you're like, oh yeah, that's a Fleetwood Mac song.
Perfect.
Fleetwood Mac has this one song called Landslide. It's one of their most famous songs. And
Yeah, I know that song.
Okay. So there's a line in that song that I always go to in this season. It's the chorus, and Stevie Nicks sings.
Well, I've been afraid of changing, 'cause I've built my life around you. But time makes you bolder, even children get older, and I'm getting older too.
Well, I'm afraid of changing because I've built my life around you. And that's been one of the biggest struggles for me, is being afraid of changing because I've built my life around identity. Like when I listen to that song, I'm thinking about youth ministry and my kids. You know, I call them, you know, my kids, because like they're like my siblings, you know. And for over a decade, I built my life, my schedule, my time, my my friendships, you know, everything was built around that group of people. Stepping out of being a youth pastor in that identity has been so hard, and it's been such a big change. And there's been so much fear in my mind based around that, where it's like, oh, if I'm not a youth pastor, what even am I? Same thing with preaching. Like in my mind, you know, I was like, man, I am a preacher. Like I love to preach the word. Like that's what I do. And I'm sure you felt the same way. I mean, you did a podcast about preaching, like all about it. Mm. So, you know, it's the same thing. It's like, man, I'm afraid of changing because I've built my life around this identity. And what I've had to come to is this reality that my identity is in Christ. It's not in youth ministry. It's not in preaching. And I can't build my life around those things. I have to build my life around Jesus and allow him to guide me to the ways that I'm supposed to use those things. And it's been really cool because when I was able to let go of those identities of like, I have to be a preacher and I have to be a youth pastor, it's been cool to see God still use those things. Like since I've come out here, I've got asked to speak at a few summer camps. So I've been able to go and do youth ministry at summer camps. Coming out here, I got asked to get involved with the youth group at the church I attend. And so I've done some volunteering with that youth group and some helping out with that youth group. And it's, for me, it was having to let go, because in my mind, I was like, well, I need to go start a youth group and be a youth pastor, or I need to go start a preaching ministry. And if I can't do those things, then it's not progressing. It's not growing in the gift. But for me, it was like, I have to die to those expectations and then just see what God wants to do. And it's been so much more liberating, if that makes sense, where it's like, I can use these gifts, but it doesn't have to be on my terms. It can just be whatever God wants. And I look at that even in our podcasting. You know, you and I started this podcast, and I would say that the heart that goes into this, I mean, I can't speak for you, but I can, because I know your heart, dude. I know that you and I, we put in the same amount of passion that we do into the show as we do preaching. And there's an element of preaching that happens in the show. We're hoping that as you guys are listening to this, you're understanding we're trying to preach the gospel to you every episode. We're trying to remind you of God's goodness and his plan for your life. So even though we're not standing on a stage preaching with the reverb and the audience and all the stuff that comes with it, we are still trying to preach in the way that God is allowing us to preach right now.
We could start adding more reverb if you think that would make us better.
Yeah, let's try it. I'm going to add some reverb. Here we go. So I just want you guys to know, I'm doing my preaching voice. I just want you to know.
No, that was good.
That God loves you.
It's so important for you to see that your life is more than the things of this world. It is what God has for you in heaven.
See, I mean, that felt pretty cool. That felt really special, but we're still doing the same thing. It's just more conversational, but our heart is the same. We're not doing a show just to get on here and talk. We are doing a show because we believe that God has given us things to share with the world, and we don't want to just keep that stuff bottled up in our heart. So we want to find ways to get it out and to encourage people and equip people.
So I want to share one passage that's been really helpful for me in processing this whole concept of God has the right to change the plan. And this is actually the passage that first put this idea in a clear way that made sense to me back in April and May, and as a lot of plans were changing. The passage is Jeremiah 18, and you probably know this passage. It's the passage of the potter and the clay. You know what I'm talking about, Aaron?
Yes, I do. It's a good one. It's a classic one that I've heard growing up, but I feel like it is such a good constant reminder of that reality.
It is a good constant reminder, but one of the things that really struck me this time around in going through it is that it's not necessarily a reminder of the thing I think it's going to remind me of.
What do you normally think it's going to remind you of?
So when I normally think of this passage, I think that this is a teaching about how God is in control. That Jeremiah goes down to a potter's house, a potter makes like a cool pot or vase or vase if he's fancy. and like make something really like elaborate and beautiful. And then God goes like, see that? That's what I do. And then Jeremiah goes like, wow, God, you're in control. And then like winks and smiles in a way where like the camera goes the ding off of his teeth.
The little like, that's how I normally think of this music passage. Starts playing, credits roll.
Yeah. And then, yeah, executive producer Michael Schur. Like, it's just, it just fades away. And it's this like nice, happy, kind of cheery moment. Is that just me, or is that kind of how you think about this passage too?
Yeah, no, totally. I feel like that's the very simplistic way of looking at it. But where would you want to take it from there? What has God shown you about this passage that's changed your perspective on that?
So to show you that, I just want to read the passage. Okay. So this is Jeremiah 18, and we'll kind of walk our way through about the first 10 verses of this chapter. Jeremiah 18 says, this is the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Now, verse 2, we're beginning that word. Go down to the potter's house, and there I will give you my message. So God comes to Jeremiah and says, hey, I'm going to give you a message, but only at the potter's house. Okay, that's very specific. I don't know why your message range is not wider than that one house, but okay.
Right.
Verse 3. So I went down to the potter's house, and I saw him working at the wheel. But, this is verse 4, the pot he was shaping from the clay was marred in his hands. So the potter formed it into another pot, shaping it as seemed best to him. Now that's an image I think that's worth kind of sitting on. When it says the pot was marred in his hands, I love the way that the NLT puts it. The NLT phrases that verse, it did not turn out as he hoped. So we don't know, like maybe this is his first go around. Like maybe this isn't that good of a potter, but it doesn't seem that way. It seems like this potter is working with the clay. It's a slow process. He's building something out, and he reaches a point where he recognizes, oh, this isn't going to be this one thing that I was shaping it towards. This is going to be a completely different thing. This is going to be a whole different kind of pot.
Interesting.
And so as he's shaping it, it's not going to be the first thing. There's this whole second thing that he's going to do. There was something in progress, but now the plan is changing.
That's interesting. I've never thought about it from that perspective before. I feel like our view of God can be so absolutist sometimes, where it's just like, yeah, he had this idea of what the pot was going to be, and he worked with the clay and nothing changed. He always knew what was going to happen. When the marring happened, he caused it specifically to build character in the pot. You know, this is talking about the possibility of things changing, of variables being thrown in the mix.
Yeah. And maybe these verses are not trying to take away that kind of absolute idea. You know, maybe
we shouldn't develop like fully fleshed out theology about that stuff from these verses per se.
Yeah, I think that these verses can be helpful towards that. But I think even if we're gonna put that aside for a moment, let's just look at where Jeremiah goes next with it. Because after this image of he goes to a potter's house, a potter was making one thing, something happened, and then made a different thing. After that, it says in verse 5, then the word of the Lord came to me, me being Jeremiah, not me, Brian. You get how the Bible works. He said, can I not do with you, Israel, as this potter does, declares the Lord? Like clay in the hand of a potter, so you are in my hand, Israel. If at any time I announce that a nation or kingdom is to be uprooted, torn down, and destroyed, and if that nation I warned repents of its evil, then I will relent and not inflict on it the disaster I had planned. And if at another time I announce that a nation or kingdom is to be built up and planted, and if it does evil in my sight and does not obey me, then I will reconsider the good I had intended to do for it. So now we're jumping out beyond this image of a potter working on some clay, but we're talking about how God deals with the nations, and it seems that he is going to respond to the heart condition that we present him.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's talking about his response to our sin. If it, verse 10 says, if it does evil in my sight and does not obey me, I will reconsider the good I had intended to do for it. That's a heavy verse for us to realize that the plans that God has for us, we can jeopardize those plans by our own mistakes, by our own sin. We can, man, I mean, just to think about the things that God has planned for your life, how you can actually mess that up with your sin. that's important. That's important for people to remember. Because I, you know, one thing I've said to my students and, you know, recently, you know, some of the summer interns I've been working with at Goodline is I just like to remind people that no mistake can separate you from God's will in the sense of, you know, I'm talking about like if you're trying to get into a certain college and your grades just aren't good enough. You tried your best, but you just couldn't cut it. And now you can't get into the college that you wanted. That doesn't mean that God's will for your life is over. Like he can adapt to whatever circumstances happen in your life. He still has a plan for you. But I think it's important to mention when the mistakes are sins, that is a time where God could take us out of the playing field and put us on the bench for a while for the sake of our own discipline and growth. He loves us. And it's like, you know, if we're on fire in a negative way, he doesn't want us spreading fire and burning other things. So he might take us out of what we want to do. He might put us on the bench and say, for now, it's time for you to sit back and let me minister to you and help redeem you and help, you know, get this sin out of your life. But if we keep fighting him on that and resisting, that's gonna put us in a really bad spot.
Yeah, I think that there's two really interesting things in these verses. And I think one of them is just what you're talking about, the idea of God as reacting.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of we don't normally think of God as reacting to humanity, but here it's very much if there's an evil nation and I warn them that I'm going to judge them and they decide to not be evil anymore, I'm going to react to that.
Yeah.
And that might make us feel a little bit uncomfortable because we think of God as constant and as unchanging. But honestly, we should be grateful that this is part of God's character, because there was a time where I didn't know Jesus and he was presented to me and I said, God, I want to know you. Mm. And if God was like, sorry, I don't change, I'd be in serious trouble.
Yeah,
I'd be lost and without him. I'd have no hope after death. Like I'd be stuck. And that's all of our stories. We all needed a God who was willing to kind of change his disposition towards us based on us simply coming to him and asking him for grace.
That's good.
You know, if he was unwilling to change that disposition, we'd all be in serious trouble.
Amen. That's good.
So the idea of God is reacting in that is actually something we can find really great hope and comfort in. And just like you were saying, that the second interesting thing is that the wicked one in this verse is the one who ends well, the one who started as the wicked nation that was in need of disaster coming their way. They're the one that ends up not receiving that disaster here. You know, they're the ones that end up in a better spot. So you're right. We can and we should think about the way that our actions can get in the way of God's desire to do good for us. Like thinking about verse 10, I will reconsider the good I had intended to do for it. We got to be really careful about how we can make God reconsider blessing us. But also we can remember when we feel like we are so far from him and so unworthy of his blessing, he is looking to bless us. He's just looking for us to come to him with the right heart attitude.
Yeah, and I think there's so much hope too in the fact that God does discipline us, because discipline is important. I mean, as a kid, I always hated it, but correction is so important. When you're about to head off a cliff, it's good for the shepherd to lead you away from the cliff, even if it hurts when he yanks you away from it. Discipline and love is a good thing and it's necessary. And I think for guys like you and me, and probably many people listening, who've grown up in the church and we don't have these gnarly testimonies of like, I used to be a drug dealer and then, you know, I went to jail and it was God's discipline. And through that, he showed me his mercy and now I'm saved. Like, we don't have those stories. It's easy for us to kind of not really put a lot of thought into God's discipline and him holding us back from the good he has for us for the sake of correcting our disobedience. But I think it's important for us to catch when that's happening. Like, for instance, like I can honestly say in the past 2 years, there's been times where I've struggled with the sin of doubting God, like the sin of being frustrated with God and not trusting him enough. And I think there's been times where in this season, God has held me back, not as, you know, a way of like, oh, you don't trust me, well, I'll show you. But as a way to kind of make me rest for a while and like, you know, take a few weeks or months off and just spend time with him. And that discipline has been, it's been good for me. It's been good for me to see just, he's blown me away with how much I actually can trust him. That's the thing. He's proven to me over and over again, as many times as I felt like, God, you don't know what you're doing. He's shown me that he actually does. And so, yeah, I think that's huge. He is a potter who isn't going to force us into the shape he wants us to be, if that makes sense. He's looking for us as the clay to submit ourselves to his shaping. And I think that a lot of times is what we forget. I think a lot of times as Christians, we can have this mentality of like, set it and forget it, you know, like get saved mm-hmm. and eventually God will work out all your hopes and dreams. And it's like, that's not actually how it works. Like we have to participate in the process. He wants to work with us, but we as the clay need to say like, okay, I'm not going to fight you. I'm not going to fight you on this. I'm going to let you do whatever you think is best. You have the right to change my plans. Your plan is always the best one. And just in my own life, I've seen when I am clay that's willing to let the potter work with me, I'm always blessed by what he ends up doing. It's when I fight it that I end up being the most frustrated. So it's not really me being frustrated because God is even doing anything. It's I'm frustrating myself by fighting against what he's doing.
Now, there's a couple important things that I think are worth pointing out here. We're talking about it's good that God brings discipline into our lives. As we're talking about the difficult year of 2020, we spent a lot of time talking about how we don't see the pandemic as God's discipline for particular sins or God's judgment on particular people or anything like that. So we're not trying to say that there's a lot of change going on in your life because you messed up. Like, that's not what we're trying to go for here.
Right.
But we do need to say that while the change is happening, we need to keep asking ourselves, am I willing to trust?
Yeah.
You know, before I really started reading through this passage this year, I always thought the potter and the clay scenario was just something that kind of happened in the background.
Yeah. It's like that verse that we always bring up, like, he will be faithful to complete in you the work that he began. I feel like my mindset towards that verse has been very much like, it's just like, oh yeah, it's just something to remember in the background. He's always working and you don't have to really think too much about it. He's doing his thing and he's going to do it, right?
Yeah, God's going to make it work. He's going to finish the job. Just keep doing your thing and eventually you'll look at yourself and be like, whoa, I'm a different person. Like that's how I always thought of that verse. And that's always how I thought about the potter and the clay. But here, the clay's willingness to become a certain thing or not become a certain thing played a really major role. And this isn't some background event for the clay. Like, I don't think the clay, as it's being like formed into something, like everything about the clay is shifting shape when it's being worked on. Like everything is changing for the clay. I don't think the clay is sitting there like, oh, well, you know, I'll just go to work and then the potter will be done by the time I get home. Like, it's not anything like that. Like, it recognizes an active participation in what's going on. For us, growing in Jesus can't be just this, it happens in the background thing in our lives. It has to be something that's on the forefront of our minds. And it's easy to let it kind of drift to the background and then big change happens. And then we look at God and we're like, what are you doing? Why are you changing things? And sometimes we even say, what gives you the right, God? And sometimes God uses these big changes to remind us, if we're talking about who has the right to set the plan, it's definitely the potter and not the clay.
Yes.
And if the clay fights the potter, it does it to its own hurt.
Yeah, it's so true. It's obvious when you put it in the framing of kids and adults. Like, I don't have kids of my own, but I've done a lot of babysitting. I've got nieces and nephews, and they don't know anything. Like, they really don't, but they think they've got great ideas. Like, they think that eating an entire carton of ice cream for breakfast is a great idea. They think that going outside and eating mud is awesome, but it's just not. And oftentimes the parent really does have very good ideas about how life should be and how things should go. And if you got good parents, a lot of times when you, like, when your parents say, hey, come watch Toy Story, you might be like, what the heck is that as a kid? But if you do it, you're going to be blessed.
It's the best kids movie.
It is.
That's what it is.
It's really good.
So get over there and watch that movie. Yeah, your parents have, and even thinking about the example of, I will reconsider the good I had intended to do for it, I can think of moments in childhood where it was like, hey, we were going to go out for ice cream, but you were a royal brat and I'm not going to reward your bratdom with ice cream. So because of your disobedience, that blessing that was coming your way, it's no longer happening.
Yeah.
And that wasn't, oh, my dad is mean. That was like, oh, my dad's a good dad. Like, he's doing something for my good, even though it feels like it's to my hurt right now. That's something that we understand when it's happening on the human level, but when major changes are happening, we forget it on the divine level. So all of this is simply to say God is still in control in the middle of rapid change. That's exactly what he was trying to show Jeremiah here in chapter 18. And so we might feel like we're in the middle of crazy rapid change, and I get that that's disorienting. I get that that's frustrating. I definitely let it become something that frustrated me and something that got me agitated and angry. But it's something where if we're willing to trust God, not only will we watch good results happen in terms of changes working out generally well for us, and sometimes God opening doors we could have never opened ourselves, the biggest thing we'll see is we just get God better. Mm. And that's really what life with him is all about.
Mm. It's really good. Amen. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Good Lion Podcast. If you like our show, please take a minute to give us a review on iTunes. It seriously helps so much. The more reviews we get, the more people will find us. And so if you want to help the show, please just go on iTunes and leave a quick review. We also love questions from listeners, and we love to do episodes focused on questions. So if you have a question and you want us to talk about on the show, send it to our email address, which is goodlionnetwork@gmail.com. Send us a question. We'd love to talk about it on the show. The Good Lion Podcast is a production of the Calvary Global Network, and it's produced by myself, Aaron Salvato, and my co-host, Brian Higgins. Our show is a part of the Good Lion Podcast Network, a network of Christian podcasters that Brian and I started with our friends. Check out our website, goodlion.io, where you can find a ton of other Christ-centered, encouraging, and equipping podcasts. Our goal with this ministry is to reach people all over the world with Christ-centered content that helps them as they walk closer with Jesus. If you like what we do and you want to support us, go to goodlion.io/support. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.